Irreverent. Entertaining. Cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Dave's Good Vibration Station with Dave Cohen, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Guys, you've just tuned in to Dave's Good Vibration Station here on LATalkRadio.com, world's most listened to internet talk radio station. I'm your host, Davey, and this is the show where we raise your vibration. Today, happy Easter. I hope everyone's Easter bunny came and dropped off some high vibrational eggs all around your house. I'm your host, Davey, and this is the show where we talk about anything and everything to raise your vibration here on LATalkRadio.com. The show and the station that you tune into, because it's just the best station on the internet. Oh, all the love in the entire universe swirling in our hearts, shooting straight to yours. We have a very, very loving, compassionate, and informative show lined up for you guys today. As you know, on the Vibration Station, we're inspired by people. People that have dedicated themselves to understanding certain laws about the, you could say, matrix in which we live. The grids in which hold time and space together. Well, why do we care about that? Why don't we just go on with our daily lives and not think about that stuff? You know, why is that? Why is it so intriguing? Well, it's because it is the platform of existence. And why not educate ourselves regarding the platform of existence, right? Because then we can use it to manipulate ourselves and our surroundings in a beautiful and very positive way. And of course, that's why we're here. There wouldn't be any other reason why we would be here at this point other than feeling good. On that note, I would like to welcome the very special and the one and only Bruce Rawls to the station today. How you doing, brother Bruce? It is such a blessing to have you once again. How you doing today, man?
I'm great, David. Thanks for having me on your show again.
Of course. Of course. I actually, when there is a series of episodes that goes by where I don't get to have you on the show, I get a little sad. Because you and I have such great and in-depth conversations and knowledgeable insights about really, I mean, there's so many powerful things that we talk about thanks to your writings, thanks to your studies and what you've decided to dedicate yourself and your energy to. You know, through you following your excitements and your joys, you've opened up doors for myself and for many, many other people, and the listeners, of course, as well, that never would have been opened had it not been for, you know, you diving into those depths of, you know, what is time, space, what is the, you know, as we've been speaking the past couple episodes that you and I have shared together, the Hermetic Laws. What are these profound laws that are very present at all times throughout space and time that actually are the governing factors of our reality? So thank you, Bruce, for shining a greater light on the truth behind, you know, really the constructs in which we live. And today, you know, you brought something to my attention, which was very funny. Today is a pinnacle show. And that is because of the Hermetic Laws, we will be talking about, as you said earlier, vibration. Now, we are on the vibration station, and I'm just going to open this up for the listeners to understand. And it's kind of an introduction to today's show. You know, I'm very excited for today's show because here on the vibration station, we always talk about vibration, good vibration, have a good vibration, feel good. But we never, you know, we've explained what vibration is, but not in the sense that we will be doing so today. Bruce has really broken down in his book, The Geometry Code, Universal Symbolic Mirrors, a beautiful way and a very clear way of understanding the law of vibration. It's something that can be easily misunderstood because, you know, we look at these tangible items that surround us, and we look at us, and we feel things, we have our senses, and you know, so we say to ourselves, well, this is what it is. It's a cellular and, you know, response to a physical circumstance, but really it's a vibrational communication to the cell. So there's I mean, everything is vibration. We understand this. Everything in existence, no matter where you are in the universe, is vibration. That's how it exists. And I'm so grateful to have Bruce here on the show with us to talk a little bit more about that. So we're actually going to be getting in to, obviously, my favorite, truly one of my favorite books of all time, The Geometry Code. I'm just going to say the full title, so if people want to search it, check it out, you can. The full title of the book, The Geometry Code, Universal Symbolic Mirrors of Natural Laws Within Us, Friendly Reminders of Inclusion to Forgive the Dreamer of Separation. I just love that. Every time I read, I just love it. It's like my favorite. I just love it because it explains everything. It's so true. That's exactly what it is. That's exactly. It's a friendly reminder of inclusion to forgive the dreamer, us, of separation. It's reminding us that everything is connected. We are all one. And then Bruce is also saying through his book, The Geometry Code, he's saying, not only are we all one, but here's the science behind it. That's awesome. That's awesome.
Well, thank you, David. I appreciate the always generous introduction and plug for my most recent book. And I had a lot of fun with that title. I kind of crammed a lot in there because I wanted to convey the idea that we do have options, and we do have a choice as to what realm of thinking we want to get into, which really does address the idea of vibration. Because in a sense, maybe just to back up a little bit.
Yes, please.
We talk about the Hermetic Laws in our conversations and in this book, and you can find them in a book. If you Google the word Kybalion, K-Y-B-A-L-I-O-N, you can find these Hermetic Laws also online, as well as I've got, you know, a bunch of stuff written on them on the Geometry Code website. But the Kybalion basically states that there's these seven Hermetic Laws, and in the previous episodes of our conversations together, we've talked about kind of an overview of the seven laws, and we've also in numerous shows actually, and then we've gone into the specifics in the last couple of shows with the law of mentalism, which states that everything is mental.
Yes,
everything exists in the mind, even though we certainly have evidence to the contrary through our senses that tell us that there's, you know, there's real stuff out there, right?
Right.
and on the, you know, a practical level, it would be silly to not behave as if that were the case. And yet, the mystical traditions, as well as modern physics, suggest that well, maybe that's an assumption that we could actually benefit by looking at carefully.
Yes.
And the benefit comes from seeing that the locus of control of our experience, not so much what happens to us, but what happens through us, which yes. gets into this week's today's conversation, becomes what we choose in our mind to entertain. Mm. And that has everything to do with vibration, and it has everything to do with the most recent conversation, which was about the law of correspondence, the as above, so below, as within, so without.
Yes.
And so being the third of the three hermetic laws of vibration we're going to talk about today, I think it fits really nicely because once we realize that it's a mental universe and everything that seems to be outside of us really corresponds to an idea in our mind that has never left its source, really, if mind is all-inclusive and tag, we're it.
Yeah, right.
We can't escape from that. Then everything, corresponds to what we have chosen to entertain, and it really gets down so simply, and we all kind of buck and rebel against the simplicity of this, which is why our world is so complicated. But it really gets down to the simplicity of two thought systems, yes. one of which is inclusion and one of which is exclusion. And that's why I managed to squeeze that word into the subtitle of the book, because inclusion is really our ticket out of the realm of fear and out of the realm of what you might call an egoic insanity, a nightmare of believing that we're separate from everything else.
Right.
And that nightmare takes so many forms, and I think since symbolically we're on Easter, the resurrection, if you will, that happens in our mind is when we pull together all the seemingly separate selves that appear to be apart from us and bring them together in one place in the mind and say, ah, this seemingly other person, the seemingly other thing, whatever the person, place, thing, happens to be,
yes.
is me. I'm yes. looking at myself.
Yes.
And we couldn't possibly yes. Do otherwise. And that's what I think the astonishing revelations of the quantum mechanical physics era that is now decades ago,
yes.
Why they were so startled in Copenhagen, Einstein, Bohr, Planck, and all those physicists who looked at each other and said, how are we going to explain this? Is that, mind is no longer something we can sweep under the rug with our Newtonian model, because
it's true. There was too much that changed. It warped the understanding of, quantum physics. It warped the understanding of humans' placement in time and space.
Exactly. A favorite quote is "There's no out there."
Yeah.
From a noted physicist. What I'd like to do actually is take a little digression. What I was thinking about this, a few minutes before we got on the air.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about what things have influenced me. Sometimes you have those pivotal moments, at different times in your life where someone says something to you that kind of sticks with you.
Very much so.
Yes. I had an opportunity here in Livermore, California, where I've been for a few months now, to hear a lecture by an author named Jack Holland. And this is about 1970, early 70s, let's put it that way. And he wrote a book called Man's Victorious Spirit. I just Googled, probably in the bookshelves or somewhere.
That's
but anyway,
That's
it's what he shared was some interesting stories, and one of them, and he was a lecturer. I'm not sure if he's even around still, but I hope so. But anyway, a really enjoyable talk that he gave here, and he was talking about a previous speaking engagement. And talked about I'm going to share two little anecdotes. One's a quick one. One's slightly longer.
No, I love it.
Both kind of fun. And she said, can you speak up? The agnostics in here are terrible. And I think she meant to say acoustics, but that's how it came out, you know. So anyway, I just thought that was kind of a fun story. But somehow that stuck in my head as one of his little opening jokes. All in some greater detail about an episode back in the 60s when he was discovering, and exploring the realm of psychic phenomena and all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
And that was in the era when another book had come out in that time frame called Psychic Discoveries Behind the Iron Curtain. Mm. And if you're familiar with that, but it's I think it's Lynn Schroeder and Sheila Ostrander.
Sounds very familiar. Sounds
anyway,
very
it's familiar. It's kind of a classic work on some of the things that were done in the Soviet research labs for purposes scientific as well as maybe less than benevolent,
right? Yes, yes.
But he started talking about that, and then he talked about tying it together with a trip to I'm not sure if it's Dharamsala. How do you say that place where the Dalai Lama is now?
Oh, yes, yes, yeah.
He basically made a trip to visit the Dalai Lama. Mm. So I think it was after the Dalai, fled from Tibet and was in exile in India, I believe, but I'm not sure about that. So don't quote me. the story was that he wanted to talk to the Dalai Lama because he was fascinated about this, and he knew he was very knowledgeable in a lot of areas.
Right.
But he was fascinated in the aspect of using someone's mind against someone else and mind control, because he knew that a lot of governments, including ours, were doing experiments with things like that.
Yes.
And he finally after some delay and waiting, was able to talk to the Dalai Lama.
Wow.
And this is hopefully I'm not paraphrasing this too greatly or misrepresenting, but the story as I remember it was that he asked the Dalai Lama about what is the the downside of the potential of mind control by the Soviets or any other nation for that matter or any other group of people.
Right.
And it was just sort of a general rhetorical question and about a number of things, but that was kind of his question that he really wanted help with.
Right.
And rather than providing what would have – when you land in Athens, and this is the Dalai Lama talking to Jack Holland.
Right,
such and such a bus or whatever to such and such a street, and there you'll find this museum with such and such a curator named Mr. So-and-so, and he will show you this book in the basement by Plato.
No way.
And you'll find your answer there.
Wow.
And so that was all very fascinating to Mr. Holland, because he responded, well, I'm not going to Athens. Well, it turned out the plane he was on the way back from visiting the Dalai Lama was hijacked.
Oh, my goodness.
They were forced down to let the hijacker off in Athens.
No way.
So anyway, all the passengers got out. Jack Holland says, well, I guess as long as I'm here, I might as well see if there's anything to the Dalai Lama's suggestion.
Wow.
And, so he sure enough finds the name of the museum and the name of the curator, and it was as he had suggested it was. And,
wow.
And he said, well, what do you know about this book in your basement or wherever by Plato? And he says, oh, I know just what you mean. And it was in Greek, which he didn't understand. This book... And translated it from the Greek into English for him. And answer, and there was the answer that indeed the head of that astute organization, both secular and non secular, I guess you could say, the Dalai Lama gave to him. Translated in English, the phrase that he was looking for was, "He is not on my wavelength."
Oh, wow!
And so. That was kind of like the answer to his question of, well, what can I do to protect myself, or how, what can a people do, collectively or individually,
yes,
to not be the subject or at the mercy of someone else's thoughts.
Yes.
Or mind control, or whatever you want to call it. Influence, intent, will. And so I thought, that's a pretty cool answer. Because it basically is saying the wavelength or the vibration or the frequency or the spectra or the whole realm of vibratory energy, if you want to think of it that way, or vibratory phenomena, is really subject to the choice in the mind.
Yes.
And so if you're not on that wavelength, you're not resonating.
Wow.
So it doesn't mean – now, I think the quick caveat to that is it doesn't mean that we don't need to do things in the world to take care of our health or, you know, whether it's nutrition or exercise or, you know, doing things in terms of activism or kindness or, you know, all the things – all the different realms that we can operate in behaviorally. Of course we would want to do all those things. We would want to do things politically and economically, you know, voting with our wallet and you know, taking care of our friends and family and everybody that we connect with to the best of our ability, including ourselves.
Yes.
But at the same time, the ultimate reality that is safe and immune from any kind of corruption or decay is the spirit that is behind all that, that isn't subject to or at the mercy of what seems to happen in the world of energy and matter and vibration. So, so ironically, we get to use the choice for the realm of vibration to choose against the things that resonate with fear and resonate with conflict and the chaos of separate interests.
Bruce, I got to tell you, man, that that was beautiful, and that was really aligned that you decided to interlude with that, because you know I had an experience weekend before last where you know I was feeling bombarded. Right, I was just feeling this tremendous amount of fear. So I've been seeing a lot of these commercials. Thank you, Bruce, for that. I mean, really, really, thank you.
You're most welcome.
And this is seriously,
I share these things because I need to hear them too. So just so you know,
it's beautiful. No, it's beautiful. It's really it's a win-win share. You know, with information that for everyone that's a part of this and that hears this, because it's so you know I've been seeing these commercials on multiple different state TV too often. There's a couple select shows that I enjoy. So when I do watch the TV, I try to tune myself out to the commercials, because they in themselves are their own form of brainwash. But I keep seeing these commercials where it says, you know, what happens if a disaster happens, you know, or how are you going to get in contact with your family if disaster happens? And then it shows, you know, floods and hurricanes and cars just underwater and all this, just bad. Just what any circumstance that the collective consciousness would agree that it is a bad thing, right? So even though there's no such thing as bad, right, it's all perception, but it would be painful to experience these losses of, you know, home, material items, things that we have attachments to, losses of loved ones, whatever, you know. So it was kind of penetrating to me a little bit. I'm thinking to myself, well, should I sit down with my family and say, well, what if something happens? But then I said, wait, I'm just making, I'm creating the space for fear. I said, if I just, right, and it's this weird thing, because I understand parallel realities. I understand that, you know, through your thoughts, you can attract experiencing an earth that somebody else could not experience, because they're attracting literally a whole other parallel reality. So you could be experiencing two completely different things and standing right next to a person. But at the same time, we think to ourselves, well, you know, well, there's disasters that do happen. There's this sense of realism behind it. You know, there's this sense of fear. And I know that it's all, it's control based. It's all control based. It's all, they want you to, you know, to buy bigger locks and to buy guns. And, you know, through the eyes of fear, we shut the light down. We close the valves that light flows to and through us through the eyes of fear. Through the eyes of love, we come in contact with one another, and we communicate, we co-create, we build a new world of love. You know, so it's really interesting that you just said that, and you answered a beautiful question for me, and that is, stay in the love, stay in the presence, stay in the love, and then you literally cannot be influenced by these lower frequencies and these lower vibrations if you maintain your frequency of love.
That is true. And I think the best way to maintain that is to not deny the aspect of the identity that we've all assumed that for you know, just as a placeholder word, we could call our egoic self, and recognize that that inner saboteur that we all have really is the mechanism by which we resist the love. The denial of the denial of truth, if you will.
Yes.
And that awareness, I think, that we're all doing this seesaw back and forth between the loving kindness that we really are and the self-interest that really erodes and propagates the fear.
Yes.
And to become aware of those two aspects.
Yes.
Of one legitimate, real, eternal identity, and the other a fraudulent one that we've all adopted, and without really thinking about it, it becomes the kind of the default. And sometimes it doesn't surface as blatantly as other times. But if we can become aware of that and see that and be compassionate about that misplaced choice of identity in our mind and have compassion for ourselves and each other,
yes,
when we see that happening, I think that is when we, you know, when we recognize that everything is either an expression of love or a call for love.
Mm.
And the vibration, if you will, that responds to that in a healing way is always a response of loving kindness, no matter what. And that makes it simple too, because in that response, we don't have to say, "Oh, well, which should I choose now?" It's always the same choice. It's if we know that finding the kindness, which isn't always easy. It's always simple, but it's not always easy.
Very true.
Because we've invested so heavily in the me first, self-centered, fraudulent identity that basically is a dualistic identity. That identity is always trying to undercut and get the foot in the door of saying, "Oh no, but you really need to stick up for, you know, this over that." You know,
right?
It's a one or the other kind of a mindset rather than a both and.
So true.
And the both and spirit really is a one of saying, "Well, how can I get my separate interests not unmet, but secondary to the shared interest?" And the shared interest is really seeing everyone as the same, and seeing everyone's the validity of everyone rather than greater than, less than, the comparative nonsense that our egos get into.
So true.
I'm reminded of George Orwell's book, The Animal Farm, and the equality of the spirit that we really have is that we intuitively and altruistically and in our finer moments recognize that that's got to be true.
Right.
But we allow ourselves to be talked into this divisive, mean-spirited thinking at times that says, "Well, yeah, but I my needs are more important than so-and-so's or such-and-such," or, you know, as a species, maybe. My needs are more important than this species or you know, whatever.
Yeah. Yes. It's so true. It's so true. We don't understand equilibrium between everything. Right?
Yeah, and so the Orwell quote that comes to mind from Animal Farm, whereas the slippery slope of the ego, if you will.
Yes.
He phrased it as in the story. If you remember the Animal Farm, if any of you've read it, it's the pigs start taking over and saying, "Well, we're gonna change this egalitarian situation to one where there's a little bit of preferential treatment." And so the sign that says all animals are equal gets crossed out, and then underneath it says all animals are equal, but some are more equal than others.
Mm. Wow.
But I think that's kind of the ethic, and that's the realm of vibration, if you will, where we start thinking in terms of comparative values, and it's that dualistic mindset that then leads to the friction and the chaos and the grievances and the antagonism and the polarization, whether it's a political one or economic or a gender issue or anything that makes differences a big deal. Right. Where there's a winner and a loser. That's usually the pivotal moment when we've crossed over that line.
Yes.
To say that okay, now there's an outcome that doesn't acknowledge the spirit that's behind everyone and everything equally.
Yes.
And
that's beautiful.
So, we're sort of getting, in a bit, as I tend to wax metaphysical, as you've noticed. Into realms that are very general, but we could look at any particular vibrational system,
right,
and see that it's really how we utilize and the purpose that we utilize any media. You mentioned television, certainly computers, social media, yeah, radio, which we happen to be speaking on now.
yes.
But it's always the choice of what's it for?
Right.
What am I going to use this for? It's always the purpose that makes the difference.
Yes.
And I think that's where if we use the wisdom of the East, I mean, you started out the show talking about the Matrix,
right,
and the idea that physics and mysticism both suggest that we're living in a holographic projection of mind. Well, maybe some of the physicists won't go quite that far, but
they just haven't seen it yet. They haven't proven it to themselves.
Maybe, but that's kind of what I think the mystical traditions and modern physics are converging on. And
yes,
and ultimately, I think if we carry it to its ultimate conclusion, we'll realize that the Big Bang is sort of a tiny mad idea, if you will, as to quote a favorite work called A Course in Miracles. the tiny mad idea being that the idea that separation could be possible,
right,
the idea that there could be a realm of vibration, a realm of awareness, which we would think of as the material world, where it would even be possible for differences to seem to exist. And yet we're so comfortable and so conversant with that and so thoroughly into our roles as participants, as seemingly separate beings and selves, acting out in you on a typical morning, just tell me if this doesn't apply to everyone listening to this. You get up, you do a few typical things, stagger to the bathroom, look in the mirror, and you see, oh, there's this person I call myself.
Right.
And then during that time, or probably before that, there's maybe a flood of a few dozen things of, oh, this is what I'm going to do today in this world, And so we're all so identified with those roles, we forget to think, is this the reality that I have chosen, or is this is this being forced on me, or
right,
is this something that I could see differently?
Oh.
I could see myself as an actor.
That's so interesting. To
in
think
a
about.
Dream, if I can see all the things that come into my senses, including the light from the bathroom mirror, including the sounds of the day and the smells, the other parts of the five physical senses, and
yes,
including the thoughts that cross my mind,
yes,
as vibrations from one of two thought systems moment to moment, I have the choice as to which thought system I'm buying into, and that thought system carries with it, if it's inclusion, it carries the vibratory realms of inclusion, and if it's exclusion, then I get the not so much fun stuff of that whole fearful paradigm.
So true.
As its baggage. Yeah.
It's so true. Bruce, I have about a 1 minute and 30 second clip that it just resonates perfectly with what we're talking about here.
Great.
So listeners, I do apologize. The quality isn't of the highest tier. I'm going to do my best to make the quality as clear as possible. This is just a clip that it just resonated so deeply with me, and I actually stole some words earlier from this clip when we were talking about fear and love, and I think this just resonates perfectly with, you know, making the choice and forgetting that we do, just like you said, you know, forgetting that we do have these choices. It's all a game. It's all a choice. And I'm just going to play the clip. It's really great. So, I can't say who actually spoke this clip. This was a commercial off of this new TV channel, that I started watching, and they have just these really interesting documentaries and good shows and stuff. It's called Viceland. Now, I've only seen a couple shows from this new TV show. It's literally a brand new TV station, it's all these different documentaries. And the reason why I like this station is because they promote change, they promote love, and a lot of their shows and stuff revolve around how to make the world a more beautiful place and bringing people together. It's like leading edge. It's like the first channel of like the new generation. So like this new understanding. So here's one of their commercials. This is real cool. Oh, sorry about that. Nerve that in you. Okay, round two. Here we go. This is really cool. Yeah.
Let's find a point. The world is like a ride in an amusement park. And when you choose to go on it, you think it's real, because that's how powerful our minds are. And the ride goes up and down and round and round. It has thrills and chills, and it's very brightly colored, and it's very loud. And it's fun for a while. Some people have been on the ride for a long time, and they begin to question, is this real or is this just a ride? And other people have remembered, and they come back to us and they say, hey, don't worry, don't be afraid, ever, because this is just a ride. We kill those people. Shut him up. We have a lot invested in this ride. Shut him up. Look at my furrows of worry. Look at my big bank account and my family. This has to be real. It's a ride. But we always kill those good guys who try and tell us that. You ever notice that? And let the demons run amok? But it doesn't matter, because it's just a ride. And we can change it anytime we want. It's only a choice. No effort, no work, no job, no savings of money. A choice right now between fear and love. The eyes of fear want you to put bigger locks on your door, buy guns, close yourself off. The eyes of love instead see all of us as one.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of cool.
That's a wonderful clip.
Yeah.
So, sort of reminded me of somehow George Carlin meets Eastern Zen and approach to the illusion.
That's so funny. That is so funny. You said that. I thought the same thing, Bruce. I thought the same thing.
That's a great clip.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I'll send that to you.
and we don't question that, do we? I mean, but it's interesting that you know we have sometimes an awareness that and to the willingness to question the veracity of our senses and to look at those vibrations and say, how am I interpreting this? Because it's really the interpretation that makes all the difference. You know, whether we interpret what's going on that comes in through our senses as feedback or as something that's happening to us. You know, if it's feedback, I think feedback is a really cool word because it basically implies that something has to be returning from its source. And if we then begin to question, well, what's the source? I think maybe, you know, in our saner moments, we might be willing to admit, well, gee, maybe I had something to do with it.
You think?
You think. Yeah, exactly. I love that. You think maybe. Just maybe, you know, I had a little complicitous involvement in the experiences that seem to be happening to me. And that's particularly important to remember as you're filling out your taxes or as I've been doing this weekend.
Yeah.
Or whatever. But, you know, it's just kind of like if we can learn to not take quite so seriously – yes. The things that are ephemeral, that come and go, and be willing to remember that, you know, on some level, we may have signed each page of the screenplay that's airing now in our mind, and it, you know, if our signature is on the bottom of every page, then it, you know, our our argument in the courtroom of the mind is going to be a little bit less stable, you know.
Yes, like, yes.
The judge is going to point out, you know, I see Bruce there that you've actually authored this entire scenario, and so what are you trying to bring to trial here today?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So if we can kind of look at that with a little bit of, you know, humor and see that we choose the media, we choose the the realms of the spectra of vibratory frequencies. Yes. We choose the interpretations. Not only do we choose. I suppose you could say on a more abstract level, and I think we do it on a more collective level. If I'm going to dive back into a little bit of metaphysical theory that kind of makes sense for me, and see if it does for your listeners. One of the ideas that kind of appeals to me is the idea that if we're really all one being, then maybe on some imaginary level we split off and made all these seemingly separate selves.
Yes.
That you know, for all intents and purposes, boy, that, you know, on a practical level, yeah, that's kind of how we get around in this world.
Very true.
But if those seemingly separate selves have forgot that they came from the same place, then it would seem like that there are things outside of our control and that we are at the mercy of externals. But if we made it all up as a collective, then maybe part of the process of getting back to that awareness of oneness is taking ownership for what seems to be happening as each individual, for what that each individual's experience seems to be.
Yes.
Would that seem reasonable?
Yeah. Oh, well,
of course,
doubt.
Not to our egoic selves. It doesn't at all, because
right. I mean, to the
we fight that tooth and nail. Yes. as you know, the fraudulent identity thief that we call our ego is, you know, because that's them's fighting words, right?
Yeah, no. Just seriously, those are like the worst fighting words for the ego. You know, that's like that's the epitome. It's the epitome of what the ego doesn't want to come to terms with. Right. It wants to say that I am separate, I am special, I am the one with the answers. you know, but,
and I think that our attention and attachment to specialness is really a hugely big clue as to when we are putting the needs of everyone, you know, on the back burner.
It's so true.
And when we've put our needs first, you know, ours is a seemingly separate self.
Yes.
To use that phrase again.
Yes.
And that basically is when we catch ourselves doing that, and we all do it a lot, to just be gentle and say, oh yeah, there I go again. I'm putting a misplaced belief ahead of what intuitively I know to be true. And I think that's why I chose at the beginning of this chapter on vibration.
Yes.
A quote from The Forgotten Song. Would you mind if I read that?
Please.
Briefly?
Oh, no, I love it. Please, please.
And it says, listen, perhaps you catch a hint of an ancient state, not quite forgotten, dim perhaps, and yet not altogether unfamiliar, like a song whose name is long forgotten, and the circumstances in which you heard it completely unremembered. Not the whole song has stayed with you, but just a little wisp of melody, attached not to a person or a place or anything particular. But you remember from just this little part how lovely was the song, how wonderful the setting where you heard it, and how you loved those who were there and listened with you. And I think that is the quality, and I think it's the metaphor of the song is so appropriate because it's that quality of vibration, if you will, that quality of feeling, mm-hmm. of the subtlety of the awareness that reminds us that kindness really is possible in every situation.
Yes.
And we can learn to see the sameness of everyone and everything.
Yes.
Slowly but surely, and to forgive ourselves when we catch ourselves being belligerent and fighting against it, and realize that, you know, we got a lot invested in this isolated identity.
Right. Right.
And we learned it, and we sort of like everybody in the world is sort of like our hired cast.
They are.
They're on our payroll. They're on our mind's payroll to as part of our Matrix movie to reinforce the idea that it's everybody for themselves. But we can turn it around. We can, you know, the victorious spirit, looking at Jack Holland's book title,
yes.
that is victorious over, if you will, the idea of over having something over us, you know, or against,
yes.
of duality. It's really transcending the idea of conflict altogether, and rising above the battleground of the dualistic thinking, where we see that. Our interests are the same as everyone else's. The sameness then becomes the way that we have compassion for ourselves and each other.
Wow.
We find a way to do the kind thing that is challenging because it basically says, every time I do that, I'm dismantling my identity in a self that no longer really, truly satisfies me.
Yes.
But I'm reinforcing at the same time something that seems intangible and invisible and abstract, and yet that's the spirit, the essence that we really are, is breathing this tremendous sigh of relief every time we do that, because we recognize that we're letting go of the masochistic tendency to perpetuate the war in the mind.
Yes, we're setting ourselves free.
Yeah.
We're like, we're waking up, we're taking the red pill. We're waking up in, you know, if you've seen The Matrix, you know, we're waking up in the sack, you know, and we're in the gooey sack, and we're, whoa, my goodness. But it's obviously metaphorical. You know, that, but no, Bruce, that's absolutely, I mean, on point. With the last couple minutes of the show, you know, when I was in reading your book, I've learned so many things. And in this chapter, one of my favorite quotes throughout this chapter. Do you mind if I read it for a moment, just for the listeners?
For it.
Which is, I was intending coming to the close of the show with this, to just give a really powerful summarization of what this chapter of your book, The Geometry Code, is about, and just really what the basis of everything that we talk about here, which is everything that has to do with physics and vibration and the law of attraction. And I mean, so this quote really, really resonated deeply with me.
Okay.
This is from Esther and Jerry Hicks. I also listen to Abraham on a daily basis, so it, of course, is going to resonate. Within your practiced attention to any subject, the law of attraction delivers circumstances, conditions, experiences, other people, and all manner of things that match your habitual dominant vibration. And as things begin to manifest around you that match the thoughts you have been holding, you now develop stronger and stronger vibrational habits or proclivities. And so, your once small and insignificant thought has now evolved into a powerful belief, and your powerful beliefs will always be played out in your experience. Just like you said, You know, law of attraction, you get what you give, you attract, you think, you experience, you think, you experience, you think, you experience. And it's this, it is a never-ending circuit. It is the infinite flow of you know, universal synchronicity it's the universe. What am I saying? It is everything. I can't define it because it is the undefinable. It is all things, it is everything, it is all places, it is all times, and it is love. And the glue is love. And I love you, Bruce. Thank you so much for this amazing information. Today was such a powerful show. We got some really, really inspiring ideas and concepts across. And listeners, always feel free to email me. Let me know how much you love Bruce, how much you love us. Dave's Vibration Station at gmail.com. once again, that's Dave's Vibration Station at gmail.com. You can also follow us, that's at Good Vibe Station. And of course, please make sure to check out the Geometry Code. That's just geometrycode.com, and make sure to pick up a copy of the Geometry Code. Also, if you're looking to transform your consciousness and start drawing your own geometry, you can check out Sacred Geometry Design Source Book, also available on geometrycode.com by Bruce Rawls himself. Bruce, all the unconditional love, light, happiness, joy, and laughter from our hearts and my heart, of course, to yours. You are just the best of the best. Have a beautiful Easter Resurrection of Light Day, and we'll see you in just a couple weeks, brother.
Thank you, David.
Thank you. Love you, Bruce. See you soon, man. Bye-bye. Guys, been a wonderful show. I'm your host, Davey. One last thing I want to leave you with is, yesterday is history, tomorrow is a mystery, and today is a gift. That is why it is called the present. Have a beautiful day of transformation, love and light, happiness, joy and laughter, abundance. We'll see you next Sunday. Bye-bye.